My name is Jim Gaffigan, and I feel... tell myself I wasn't going to cry. I feel like they're going to edit this.
No.
I feel privileged.
Oh.
About being Conan O'Brien's.
Oh, that's so nice. Yeah.
Fall is here, hear the yell. Back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there, welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I am the aforementioned COB, joined by Sonam Avsesian.
SM.
And
MJG.
Well, just, I don't want to know your middle name. The less I know about you at this point, the better. You don't want to know an animal too well before you put it down. Any hoots. What's up, gang? What's happening? What's the haps?
Yeah, you tell us.
Yeah,
big
news.
Big news.
Yep. It was announced. That was it Friday, I guess? It was announced that...
this is evergreen. We like to keep these.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. Yeah. Yes. There is some big news out there. Would you like to tell us what it is, Sona?
Well, you've been tapped to host the Oscars in 2025, which is a really big deal. It's really cool.
That's cool. Oh, why are you guys silently applauding?
Oh.
Wow. Guess what? That is the amount of applause I'll get when I walk out on stage.
Okay. I think there's also partially
a
reason.
It'll be the sound of two hands clapping.
America's wanting to know because, you know, Sona and I are essentially your co-hosts on this podcast. Why aren't we co-hosting the Oscars with you?
Yes, I know. I have to mention this Vulture article real quick.
Okay.
Because Vulture is my favorite entertainment article. And it said, Conan O'Brien will host the 2025 Academy Awards. And at the end, it says, now that O'Brien is our official host, we got to ask, will his assistant Sonam Avsesian be there? Will she get to be on stage? What happens with Sonam Avsesian in all of this? So it's not just us asking.
Wait, nothing about Matthew James Gourley?
You know what? After I said it, I was like, oh shit, he didn't mention anything about
quit.
Gourley.
No, there's another article. It's in the Pasadena Post. It's more of a supermarket circular.
How do we fit in? What do we
and
do?
It said 89-cent sale on roast beef, pre-sliced, and Matt J. Gourley.
And it definitively says should not be.
Should not be in any way. Sona.
Where do we go? What do you want us to do, boss?
Okay. Sona, it's the Oscars.
Yeah,
okay?
I know.
They made him, they let me in, which was probably a mistake. But I don't know, Sona, that's a big night.
Come on. I know so much about movies.
You only know about Bond films.
That's not true.
That's true.
That's not true.
The movies you know about are not in the Criterion collection. Let's put it that way.
Come
you don't
on.
Know about the classics.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
See, this is the type of shit you can have at the Oscars.
Yeah, this is a great top to the show right here. What about you, Sona? What have you got to say for yourself?
Pitch yourself. I am the only person in this among the three of us who knows new things, including new movies.
New movies like after 1991.
Yes, exactly. So I think it's a natural
name one
fit.
New movie.
Yeah.
That came out this year?
Yeah.
See, you can't.
Now I'm on the spot, and I'm really nervous.
Anora Conclave?
I know. Heretic with my boy Hugh? I mean, I'm a millennial.
Okay, but you're pitching yourself, and I think Vulture is pitching you.
Yes.
And shout out to Vulture. I think they do amazing work.
I love Vulture.
They're okay.
But... iced by Vulture.
God damn.
Gourley. But listen, pitch yourself for what you would do on air. Okay, you're a millennial and stuff, but seriously, what are you going to do?
Okay, I can't sing.
Right.
Sold.
I can't dance.
You have hard G's.
I'm terrible with... like, if you have, prepared material for me.
Oh, yes, yes. Anything that requires,
I can do any accent.
Okay, let's hear it.
Oh, my God.
Give me an accent.
French.
South African.
French.
French is like this. I can do French. It's easy.
South African.
South African.
No, you're Australian.
I'm South African.
Hey, that's not bad.
South African.
No.
Yes.
No. District 9.
No.
District 9.
Yes.
No.
She's very good.
No.
Wait a minute.
Are you kidding me?
Okay. Austrian.
Austrian Christoph Waltz. He's Austrian.
What, you just say the names of people in your impressions?
Oh my God, Vulture, are you listening?
It's like a German accentomist. No, fuck. What? I don't
You're
know what
Swedish
that was.
Now.
Shut up. Oh, there's too God. Much.
Scheitzer.
What?
Scheitzer is shit in German.
You said Scheitzer.
I thought that was another thing you wanted me to do in accent. I crush it with accent.
No, no. Can I just say something? I was skeptical. You're out, Gorley. And listen.
No.
Vulture.
I'm hosting the Golden Globes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But Sona, I am impressed.
Yeah.
Because now I'm thinking of all these really funny bits I could do where I'd say, everyone settle down. And then I hear a French person in the crowd.
My friend doesn't come in. I'm running the Oscars.
And the crowd says,
oh, Conan O'Brien.
The Oscars are my Super Bowl. You guys have sports. I don't have sports.
Listen, Matt, you are so not a part of this conversation that I can't even hear you right now. Okay?
Oh, my God.
And I guess it's a silent J because I can't hear you.
Oh my God.
Sona.
Yeah.
I think you have a good chance of being in the Oscars
somehow.
Thank
you. Yeah. Scottish. I could do Scottish.
And guess what? I'm pretty sure I don't have to clear this with anybody at the Academy.
Yeah.
I mean, my feeling is they gave me the keys to the whole show. That's my guess.
Yeah, I think so.
I guess what I say goes. So you're going to be the first 40 minutes. And I'm going to say, listen, the Oscars is all about, it's not just about the United States, it's about the world of film. Here now is everyone in the world representing all nations. You come out in a combination of 15 different national costumes.
Easy.
And you welcome everybody in different accents.
Yes.
Go.
Give me an accent.
Just start going.
Start with French, and then we go, oh, I'm Scottish. I'm a Scottish person. I'm Scottish.
Oh, God.
Merida, you got to get married. You can't do archery, Merida. I'm doing brave.
Guess what? Gorley, I've never agreed with Sona before, but you've got to shut the fuck up.
I can't just like think of accent. Can you just tell me accent?
Mexican.
Yeah, Mexican. Do Mexican, Sona.
Yeah. Yeah. Do it. Do Mexican
careful.
In front
careful.
Of Eduardo.
Yeah.
Can I be honest? I'm
look
not...
into his eyes and do a Mexican accent.
Yeah, I'll do it like Conan.
That's not what I do. Es importante que nosotros entendamos. Pero creo que sí, well, pues.
That's it.
Listen.
We're killing time here.
The Oscars is all about killing time.
Yes.
It's when they run it efficiently, it's 6 hours long.
You've got 4 hours where you have to come up with material.
And No. It's 4 hours of solid show and all the stuff they have to get through.
How important are the awards?
I think I get probably a total of 48 seconds total on them.
Okay.
If they're smart, that's what they'll do. I will be hosting the 2025 Oscars, apparently, with Sonam Obsession, Woman of a Thousand Voices.
Yes.
And with, I'm going to be nice here, the backstage behind the scenes help.
I'm the only one that would truly appreciate this.
No,
you're
going to
freeloader.
No.
You're just a goddamn coattail riding hack. I'm the only one that
I
loves
said you're going to be there.
I don't want to be backstage. I want to be in the lights. I want to be rubbing elbows with Nicholson.
Nicholson?
Yeah.
You'll have to go to his... He's at home in his basement.
I don't think he's been to the last, like, 15 Oscars.
He's living in another time.
Oh, fuck you.
Anyway, let's get to it. We got a lot of show today. My guest today is a hilarious comedian whose latest comedy special, Jim Gaffigan, The Skinny, is now available to stream on Hulu. Jim Gaffigan, welcome. I'm thrilled that you are here because I was curious today and I thought, how many times did Jim come on my late night show over the years because you were a regular fixture? 30 times.
Really?
You came on, you do stand up, you could also do hilarious panel, you could do everything. And I'll just say this up front, every time with a completely new set of material, you are, for my money, the most prolific comedy mind that I can think of.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, as
that's
you,
it. Gotta go.
Yeah, no, but it is. It is. I mean, that's what's so rewarding is the coming up with the material, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole lesson that I want to share with everyone. It's enjoying the process.
Oh.
No, but there is something. Yeah, yeah. Like, whenever I get frustrated, I lose sight the fact that it is really rewarding mm-hmm. to kind of come up with material and be able to do it.
It's one of the reasons why you're one of the biggest comedy stars out there now.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I say one of, like, there's like 35.
Yeah, no, there's, I mean, there's like 35.
I'm sorry, 135.
135.
Of the 2,000 top
of
comedy
the people in the Los Angeles County, you are 8,000.
No, no. I mean, the other nice thing, too, is I've seen people ride this crazy wave and then that kind of can peter out. And you have consistently, over the years, you're always really funny. It just kept building and building and building and building. And now your level of success is mind-boggling. And I look at your whole career and I go, oh, it was all earned in this I say that in a very Catholic way, but it was all built. You've built this thing and now I'm hard-pressed to think of anyone else who could tour with Jerry Seinfeld, you know? And it's crazy.
Yeah, no, I'm very grateful. And it's a weird thing. You know, there is nothing normal about going on stage and trying to make strangers laugh. So that's whenever, like, comedians are like, yeah, these weird people, I'm like, but like, there's nothing weirder than going on stage and trying to get the approval of a room full of strangers.
Right. Who sometimes are hostile to begin with. Yeah.
And also, it's like, it is a conversation, but it's very, you know, it is very one-sided. It's like, I'm the only one with a microphone. And if they responded verbally, I'd have them removed. So it is a unique conversation.
Yes.
But it is the perfect type of conversation where they can respond with hee 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 or silence. That's one of their options.
Do you ever have this? I have found, for some sick reason, there's always part of me that enjoys the silence. Okay, get a laugh, and then nothing. I enjoyed, in some sick way, I enjoyed that. And it's hard to explain to people that you want laughs, but what I really want is some laughs, and then I want a big dead spot where we can all sit down as a group and wonder what just happened.
Well, you want to relieve the tension, right?
Yeah.
You can identify that in comedians. Like Bill Burr will say a statement where people are like, come on, don't say that.
Yeah.
And then he will win you over it, and you're like, all right, yeah, I guess you have a point there.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I mean, I don't know if I'd say it, I'd phrase it the way you're saying, but yeah, you make a point.
Sure.
But a lot of comedians love that tension.
Yeah.
When you relieve it or release it, it's more rewarding. You know what is what I've been dying to talk to you about ever since we did that benefit with God's Love Delivered?
Yes, we did a benefit together. I'll just set it up. Yeah. We did a benefit together in New York City at the Beacon Theater. It was God's Love We Deliver.
It's an incredible organization. Mm-hmm. We visited the day before.
It's a giant kitchen where they make food. I think
for people that are ill and then also for their caretakers, it's the whole package. I think it really kind of kicked off during the AIDS epidemic, but it's like been going strong.
It's expanded. It's this amazing organization. And one of the things they asked is, could you guys come down who are part of the show? Can you come down to meet all the workers and sort of participate and work in the kitchen, which we all did, which was fascinating.
Yeah, it was amazing. Oh, but so we're figuring out what we're going to do for this. And then there's also these elements where they're like, I think it was that event where they're like, Bill Murray might show up, Martin Short might show up. And here's what I'm getting to. Like, there is, because there's this ongoing kind of, you show affection by criticizing someone. And then how that overlaps with roast comedy. And here's my point. My point is, I believe the most powerful roaster or roast comic that's ever existed, and this includes Don Rickles, I think Martin Short.
Yeah, I'm totally with you.
Beyond a doubt, the quickest, meanest.
Yes.
So funny.
Yes.
And he does the Jiminy Glick because he's a sweet guy.
And he can hide in the fat suit.
Yes.
And say things like, no, you know, your career never quite took off, never did it, you know.
And so he's stating the obvious.
Yes.
And, oh, sorry, I cut you off.
No, like, go ahead. But
I just think it's came so
out,
fascinating.
He came out, I was out, you were out, and then he came out, and I think he went after both of us. And of course, you and I are like kids in a candy shop.
The artistry of what he does it, and compared to like roasting,
yep.
where you see someone, you know, even the Tom Brady roast, or you think of Don Rickles, who is obviously magical. But the what Marty does is he does it in such, and by the way, none of it's scripted. I think he just does it.
I do think he thinks.
Really?
I think he thinks ahead of time. Not to take anything away from
maybe
him.
Maybe some of the Jiminy Glick.
Because the writing is, I mean, it's so sharp. But I think some of the, no, he can do it. He can do it ad lib, but I think he also has some loaded
up.
Because
when we did the God's Love Delivered, he literally walked out, stole the whole show just dressing us down.
Yes. Yeah.
For 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And left.
Yeah.
He was shooting the next day. He's 75 years old, walked out, ripped into us, left. And everyone's like, well, that's the best part of the show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
And these two pale,
yeah,
these two skeletons kind of like, are standing there.
We're like,
yeah, anyway. Maybe Marty will come back. Stay in your seats.
Yeah.
That was a joy.
And he's also a sweet guy. Like, when you talk to him.
He's the real deal, yeah.
When he's not performing, you're like, it's, I don't know, maybe he's got a split personality. And he was also great on that. He's a great actor, too.
Yeah.
He was great. Now it's like I'm trying to. Win him over for some job.
Well, it's a good guy. He's, you know, he's riding high.
He's riding high. I think he controls some purse strings.
Yeah. I want to ask you about, you know, you've been in comedy for so long, but you never, your DNA never merged with Saturday Night Live. And then you get this gig to play Tim Walz during the run up to the election. So suddenly you're in the world of SNL. It was kind of interesting to me because I thought, oh, I want to get Jim's take on SNL because he's a really smart, funny guy. And I know that that was something that would, everyone wants to check that bucket list off.
Absolutely.
So what was that like for you?
It was really interesting because that is one of the questions that, you know, I've been doing stand-up or in the comedy thing for 35 years. And I never auditioned for SNL. I've never hosted, never. And it's just, it never lined up where it was a possibility. I think there was talk of me auditioning to be a writer, but at that time I was like, no, I want to be an actor. I want to be on the West Wing. And so
terrible instincts. Why Rob Lowe? What's he got that I don't got?
No, it's the ultimate graduate school of comedy, right? To go there, there's nothing that it's unique to the comedy business. I mean, it's a unique television show in that they've, you know, outside of Living Color and Mad TV, no one's even come close to replicating it. Probably financially doesn't make sense. And it's the impact on the zeitgeist. So it was a huge thing. There's, I've always been aware that it's something that you don't campaign for.
Yep.
And so I'm respectful of the boundaries and kind of the cultural phenomenon that it is. So when she picked Tim Walz as her running mate and then Steve Martin turned it down, you know, the internet was bringing up like every doughy white Midwestern guy. And I was like interested, but I was like, well, I'm not, you can't campaign for it.
Yep.
You can't
you either
like,
get the call or you don't.
Yeah, yeah, you can't be like, hey, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to go on Howard Stern and do my Tim Walz impression. You can't do that, right? And so I very much stood back. And then I would check in with my manager who would say, you know, here's what they're thinking, but you're supposedly on a list. And again, there's nothing you can do on it. And so then I was in, I get one acting job a year. So I was in England doing this acting job. And at night, I'm walking back to my hotel and I get a call from my manager and he's like, hey, so we've been telling people at the Booker at SNL that you've been sending us little videos where you're pretending to be Tim Walz. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And he goes,
and you weren't.
And I wasn't. And so he was on with my manager and my agent. I'm like, oh, well, that's an interesting approach. But, you know, this is what you guys do. And they're like, yeah, and now they want to see those. And I'm like, so what do you mean they want to see them? I'm like, well, we brought it up. And now they're like, why don't you send them
over? I'd be mad at this management team.
And so I spent the next hour kind of in my hotel room, taking off a jacket, putting on a thing, doing different And I had kind of been, you know, checking out Tim Walz and looking at speeches. And then I just, in that moment, I just did an impression of my brother Mitch, who is this, similar to Tim Walz, a very sincere, enthusiastic Midwestern guy who's kind of got a little bit of that golly gee. And so I essentially did an impression of my brother Mitch in a different settings in this England hotel, sent him off, and then, you know, I don't know what happened, but it worked.
They hired your brother Mitch.
Yeah. So when people are like, how do you do that impression? I'm like, well, just don't meet my brother Mitch, and we should be fine.
Yeah. Grow up in Indiana.
Yeah. Grow up in Indiana. Surround yourself with very sincere Midwestern people that have that optimism that Tim Walz has, you know, which is like, we can do this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, geez, come on, Jimmy. You know, like that's my brother Mitch. I mean, geez, Jimmy, you know, God. I mean, Jimmy, you're a bad driver. Like my brother Mitch would just get so angry when
I
would
drive. He's even sweet when he's telling you bad things about yourself.
Yes. He's like a great guy. So it's, that's what happened. But it was absurd because not only was I, this opportunity to be on SNL, and it was just for 5 weeks, but then they bring in all these all-stars, right? So they bring in Maya, who I had worked with before, Dana and Andy, and I'm like, so not only am I doing this guest star, but like the MVP from every decade for the last 40 years. So it was stressful in an unnecessary way, where it's like, you know, I go on stage in front of huge rooms, but I was like, I have two lines. How do I do it? Yeah. So I was definitely a little nervous.
Did you like the machinery of it being around? There's nothing else like it.
Yeah.
And I've always thought there is the carnival atmosphere of it, the machine aspect of it, it's Willy Wonka's factory, it's all these things that you grew up watching, and then suddenly you're inside it, and then there's the build up to the show, there's the meeting between Dress and Air, and then after the show there's a party. It's this whole Roman kind of crazy. It's like the Colosseum followed by the orgy. You're just, what's happening? This is madness.
It is. It's insane every step of the way. So I remember I did the table read the first week. I guess that's on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, all right, I know what I'm, and I know that there's going to be a lot of changes. And then by the end, I would be like calling my point person at like 10, you know, 8 o'clock on Friday. I'm like, do we know what we're doing? And they're like, oh, I'm going to send it. You know, it's just because it's the cold open and it was the election. So they were kind of, you know, what? And so like, there were things where if you have an idea, you're looking at a writer who's been up for 4 days, who's also realizing there's the element of serving everyone in the cold open. There's also Lauren's stuff. So it's a very complicated thing. So you're like, I don't want to be a pain in the ass. Like one of the things I kind of pride myself on is hopefully being a good soldier when I'm in a situation like that. Because having—
Do your part well. Don't let anybody down.
Yeah. And not be the pain in the ass. So I kind of want to do that. But yeah, so that whole process of the bureaucracy— And maybe that's not the right term, but it's the process is so bananas that you also have to just go with the flow. And then the meeting in between the dress where Lauren would go up there and be like, don't touch your ear. And you're like, okay, all right, I won't touch. I didn't know I was touching my ear, but okay. And some of it is he's giving his notes. He's also this icon who obviously, you know, like I realize now that he is the modern day equivalent of P.T. Barnum, right? The impact he has on the zeitgeist is so enormous. So he sits there and he goes, yeah, we're not going to do that. Or like things that I think people could judge as bizarre. But if you consider the history and the on base percentage, the batting average, it's pure genius.
Yeah. If someone could watch the process of how a sketch gets written and then it's read through, I do think it's Wednesday, as it gets read through on Wednesday and then it gets to rehearsal, then it gets to the dress show, Then there's that meeting beforehand, and then they select, you know, they select the sketches. Finally, yeah. they reorder it, and then there's the air show that happens. I think watching that process would make less sense than how they pick a pope at the Vatican.
Yeah.
I think there's this, there's more mystery, smoke signals, craziness, you know, cardinals making crazy deals in behind ancient walls. That would seem more normal than what happens at Saturday Night Live.
And I think there is also something of the resiliency that you need to process. I mean, you went through it, but the resiliency that these creative types, these people that are creative because they know how to react, listen to their emotions, or keep in touch with their point of view. But because even the, so like I only did one table read. So like, I don't even know what day that is. And then also like the moving parts, like I think on the last episode, they did cuts. And then I think they had to cut a sketch mid show.
Yeah, they do all the
which
time.
Which is just like, how do you, not happening.
No, I back in my day, I authored several of those sketches where you're, I've called my parents and I've said it's about two, you know, coal miners and they're, you know, their little bird that's with them. And then look for me because I mean, that's my sketch and it's going to be on at 12:55. And my parents would be like, well, we're going to watch. Yay. My father was Ronald Reagan. Yeah.
Well, those Democrats with their taxes. We could use you up on Capitol Hill.
And then at 12:48, I'd see my card come off. Because other stuff went long, so my card would come off the board and go to the side of the board, which means there's this side of the board that's outside the grid where literally you see your card slipping beneath the waves. Wow. And so suddenly my parents the next day, well, we thought it was terrific. It wasn't on.
Yeah.
They are lying.
Yeah. Oh, no.
They went to bed at 9.
They went to bed at 9.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm so happy that you got to have
that experience.
And I'll just put it out there. You'd be a perfect host for that show. And you are in the zeitgeist now, and they'd be lucky to have you. So from my lips to Lauren's ears.
Well, I am standing back. I have no opinion on that. I am. I have all
respect. If nominated,
respect.
I will not serve.
I have all respect for the process.
The convention. Right. I will do as I'm told.
Yes.
I was going to ask you about, because there's something about, I'm just always trying to figure out, especially comedic minds I really admire. I want to get into a little bit of the workings of where they're from. I know you went to an insanely small high school in Indiana. Like, how small are we talking?
There were 105 kids in the entire school, but there were 25 in my graduating class. There were 5 girls.
Oh my God.
And 20 guys.
Jesus.
And, Chief Justice John Roberts went there.
Oh, really?
And, but it was kind of, so now I think it's 150 students.
It's just blown up.
Seven girls.
Now it's huge. Now it's
6 girls.
But it was a great experience. And, you know, there's a delusion in those smaller schools where you're like, you know what? Yeah. And so, like, I didn't have that John Hughes experience where there were the potheads and the jocks and the beautiful people. It's like everyone was everything.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of had an impact where I didn't necessarily, so when I got to college, I wasn't swayed by I should only hang around football players or I should only do this or that. Yeah.
Somewhere you got this ability. There are a lot of comedians I admire, but I know, well, they can kill in front of this crowd, but they should probably stay away from that kind of crowd or vice versa. They have their areas. I feel like I can't imagine a crowd that you wouldn't kill in front of. You do feel like someone who talks to everybody.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah. No, it is weird because having done corporates, you've done corporates.
I've done some corporate, but really not much. Sometimes the assignment is just like,
it's so bizarre.
You know, make sure you mention
Yeah.
And you know, whatever, the CEO.
Yeah.
You make sure you mention, you know, really get him and something just, I don't know.
Yeah,
I,
and
I,
then
I get
you
very
look
depressed.
At the CEO and they're like, don't do that. Yeah. But I used to
I hear
always...
he's a real shithead. Yeah, that was no. My go-to line. And they'd be like, hey, we thought you had a joke or something.
Yeah, they're, well, sometimes they're like, you can make fun of it. Make fun of, you know, Mindy. She's in charge of marketing. Go after her. And then you look at Mindy. I don't do that stuff
right,
then you look at Mindy and she's like, what are you doing?
Yeah. It was I'm just in charge of marketing.
It was just that one person's bad idea. Do you know what I mean? And so, but the corporate setting is such a, like, there is part of me that, because I feel like I can work in those corporate settings where I, that means that it might be all over. Because, like, I would do a corporate show, I would bomb, and then you get off and they were like, you were great.
Yeah, we
and
just
I was
don't
like,
laugh.
No one laughed.
They're like, well, no. We're too rich to laugh.
Yeah, well, we were golfing all day, so, but I had much better than the guy before who made fun of Mindy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was one, as I say, I've tried to not do it too much, but there was one, it was, I think, an integration, maybe with the Turner show. I can't say the name of the company, but it was a telecommunications company. And we had to do this. They said, hey, Conan, they're buying time on the show and they really want you to go. So I remember I got on a plane and flew somewhere, and they say they're in there. It's the top. It wasn't and I come out, I had wrote jokes because you can't do standard stuff. It's got to be for them.
Yeah.
And it's got to be about this company and stuff like that. So a lot of work went into it. I walked out there. I want to say it was about maybe 12, I think all guys, and they were in big leather chairs reclined slightly. And I looked out the window. There was a big window behind them, and they had projected the famous logo of the company onto a mountain that you could see in the night through the window. So I walked out there, and it was these, and I started doing my, and I thought, oh, this is, I've never felt more like a pathetic, you know, bring the clown in.
Yeah.
Bring the clown. We're ready for the clown. And
the
they,
court jester.
And I could see Did some of them.
Do not challenge the king too much.
Yeah. And I could see, they weren't really laughing, but they had wry smiles. And occasionally I could see one of them adjust his recliner a little more.
Yeah.
And I started to make fun of the fact that the logo was projected onto a mountain.
Yeah.
Out like this all felt evil. Yeah. And I'm sort of starting to go off on that. And one of them deigned to crane his neck to see. Oh, yes, it is, isn't it? What is wrong with that?
Yeah.
That's as it should be, as it always is. Yeah. And I just left shivering. And I don't know. It was a terrible experience.
Yeah. Have you done a birthday party? That's pretty weird.
I did a very famous person's birthday party for no money.
Oh, really?
I did it as a
favor.
Oh, that
must have went well. If there was no money, that means it's pure death.
It was.
Was it for the birthday person themselves or one of their children? Or
no, it was for the person. It was a famous person who, and it was a personal favor because they had done the show a bunch of times, and one of their management said, "Hey, Conan, would you stop by and just do?" And I remember it again, feeling like, "Bring him in."
Yeah,
you know, it was just. Let's see if he amuses us. And I didn't like it. It's fun to perform for real people.
But there are people like Regis Philbin would love that.
Yeah.
And the people are listening are like, who's Regis Philbin? But there are some people, it is kind of in their DNA, but
he would love doing it or love being the recipient. What do you mean?
I think someone like, not that I know Regis or knew him, but like there's some people that are like showmen that would be relish the opportunity. It's kind of, even when we did that Pope thing.
Oh, we got to talk. Well, let's back it up quickly.
Yeah.
5 months ago, something like that, you contacted me out of the blue and said, would you be willing to go to Rome and meet the Pope? Which is the weirdest to this day. I think it's the third weirdest text I've ever had. And the other two I can't say on the air. This text came in and I thought, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And so I contacted you back, and then it turned out insane, as if some higher power was at work, that my wife, my son, and I were going to be in Italy at Lake Como that week. Wow. So literally all we had to do was get on a train and go down and be part of this because they were inviting comedians. So it's you, me, Chris Rock, Jimmy Fallon, Stephen Colbert,
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
I mean, the list goes on. David Sedaris, Tig Notaro.
Yeah, Rami. Just really interesting. I mean, it's such a surreal experience. But like in that setting, like I don't know if you remember, because we all went in there. It was like
I think they told us to be outside the Vatican at the gates at 6:50 in the morning or something. I mean, the sun is just coming up in Rome, and I thought, doesn't the Pope? He's the Pope. He should be asleep. I would be like hitting this. If I was the Pope, I would hit my snooze alarm constantly. I would just sleep as late as possible.
Yeah, he's like in his 80s.
They told us that we were like his third thing of the day, that he gets up at like 5 in the morning. And so we got there, and then they bring us into the Vatican and they sit us down this surreal room.
Yeah, there's comedians from every country. Mm-hmm. There's probably a humorous take on where there was a meeting and someone was like, well, why don't we bring in the comedians from throughout the world? But the Pope was, you know, it was about humor, how we could help. I don't know.
No, it was actually... He gave his speech. His speech was in Italian.
Yes.
So we couldn't understand it, but they gave us the printout of the speech, and it was actually very beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very nice unifying idea about comedy and how it relates to bringing people together. And I thought, well, that's...
And humor's a level of honesty and all that. Yeah.
But he didn't have an ender. And we were booing him.
I did notes on the thing, and I handed it. I'm like, "This here's my rewrite."
Yeah, but here's the thing: you did it while he was doing it, which was
just
very
rude. Some punch ups. You know what I mean? Some punch ups. You know?
Yeah. So that was a very surreal experience.
Yeah. So we are in this room in the Vatican, and there's comedians from all the different countries, like Stephen Merchant.
Yep.
There were some countries where you're like, well, shouldn't they have more people from? Like, there was no one from the Philippines. I was like, I've been to the Philippines. That's a pretty Catholic country.
And there are a couple of people I quizzed, and they were like, I'm more of a weatherman. A lighthearted weatherman. I'm like, well, you're not a comedian. So, no, sometimes I say low pressure front, more like high pressure front. Okay. But yeah, it was just a little.
I'm a cartoonist.
Yeah.
And there was, so there's 300, I don't know how many.
All over the world, yeah.
All over the world, sitting in this room. It was everyone that couldn't behave in church or synagogue or in the mosque was in this room. And then there would be, because it was his third meeting, there'd be these people that would walk by.
The Swiss Guards came out.
Yes.
The Swiss Guards came out and did this whole, they're wearing the outfit of the Swiss Guard, which is the most, which was designed by...
Leonardo
DiCaprio, right.
Leonardo
Da Vinci designed it.
Yes.
And if Leonardo Da Vinci hadn't designed it, they would have changed it a long time ago.
Yes.
Because it looks like a cross between a clown costume and someone who's working at, a ground rounder. I don't know. It just looked insane. They come out with pikes. They do a whole thing. And then the Pope came out.
And they're walking by. So there's people, you feel like you're just sitting in the room waiting. And there's people, these characters that go by that are from like medieval times.
Yes.
You're like, wait, what is
it? Was a medieval fair.
It's like, what is going on? So you think, oh, the Pope's coming. But in that setting, do you remember Jimmy Fallon stood up and did bits? And I was like, he's the king of the clowns.
Well, the rest of us were like, well, we got to kind of
be respectful.
The rest of us are being kind of respectful. He did like an 8-minute Mr. Bean bit where he can't find his chair and he keeps flopping down and falling down. and we're and he's like, wow. And then he gets up and turns the chair around, but it's going the wrong way. And he's like, who's a Hubba Hubba?
But it was very funny.
Yep,
but
yep.
It was also it was this meeting of everyone who couldn't behave, who was at one point in eighth grade sent to the principal's office. It was fascinating.
My favorite was the part where we're all going up. They line us up and we all go up to shake hands with the Pope.
Because that was also fun seeing people's different reactions.
Everyone was different. I mean, Stephen Colbert, very, I mean, it was, he's very pious and devout and you know,
probably he knows more about Catholicism than the Pope.
Oh,
right.
And also, he asked me the night before, like I think in front of everybody, we all went out to dinner, and he said, "Conan, do you think the Pope is aware of your work?" And I said, "Abso-fucking-lutely not." He's an Argentinian man who's in his 80s, and you're like, "No, there's no way he knows me." Yeah. I think Stephen was hoping that the Pope was big fans of all of ours.
Oh, really? Well, I know that Stephen...
Well, he knows you, I think.
No, well, I mean, I met him, but I don't think that...
Well, he went to your high school.
He went to the Pope. Went to my...
With no, Robert, like... it's you, Roberts, and the Pope.
But Stephen did, I think, he does the audible or the audio of all the book, the Pope's books.
Yes, and he told that to the Pope.
Yeah.
When he was up there.
And the Pope just probably gave him like, no. Get out of here.
I asked it. Like, I could see him. If you see the videotape, Stephen's talking to him for a little bit. The rest of us are just going like, hello, Your Eminence. And good, nice place you got here. And then we move on. And, nice job plundering the world's gold over an 800-year period.
Nice conquest of South America.
Yeah. No one advertises like you guys. You know, whatever. But Stephen's talking to him for a bit, and I asked Stephen what he talked about, and he said, I told him, Your Holiness, I do your audiobook, and I narrate it, and blah, blah, blah. And he said the Pope used his hand to push him. used his hand to push him down the line. That's a nice. Now get the fuck away from me.
Yeah.
Did you bring gold? No, we didn't bring gold. Then I steal your gold. No, you can't do that anymore. I'll get your gold.
He's a leprechaun.
He's a leprechaun now.
I'll get your gold.
I'll get your gold. You'll see.
That's a spicy meatball.
I'll send a conquistador. I get your gold. No, you can't really do that anymore. You want to taste a pizza pie? I've got a pizza pie. Wow. I'm glad they didn't let me perform at that thing. That would have gone badly. But it was crazy. And then they said at the end that we got to, I thought we were getting I sound like a real dick now, but I thought, well, you've come all this way. Well, for me, I pretended that I flew all the way from LA when I just literally got an Uber from Lake Como and then demanded pay for my airfare back. I didn't do that. But I thought they said like, and then you made tour of the Vatican. But basically they just shoved us through a door and then we were in with all the tourists, and tourists were like, what are you doing here?
It was weird. After that event, they let us into this room and there was this red carpet, like media. And I was like, now I know why we're here. But it was
it's what they do in an award show. Everyone's there to get their media. And
And also get the message out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And as you said, it was a very sincere message. And
it was beautiful. It was really nice. It was a nice message. My golden conquistador riff aside, 800 years of plundering still. It was a lovely message.
Great example of something that's cool, complicated. Like even talking to Julia Louise Dreyfus, there's some complexity. Like at the dinner, she's like, I don't know how I feel about some of this. I'm like, that's why it's interesting, because it's complex.
Yes, we all went in there, I think, for the most part, with complex feelings about this institution and its place in the modern world, and of course, the women who were present had very complicated feelings.
Of course,
and it was really nice to talk about all that.
Yeah, I love doing events like that where it's a little bit, you're gonna anger some people. Like I did the Al Smith dinner, which is
Trump there.
Trump was there.
Kamala Harris did not go.
She did not go.
Yep.
And there was part of me that's like, I'm not a Trump guy, but like there was part of me, and there were plenty of people that were invited that are like, I'm not even going to sit in the same room as him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so there is something where, when I did that, I knew there were going to be people on the left and on the right that were going to be angry, which almost kind of ties back to like, you know, that moment of where people are uncomfortable, that it's kind of, you relish it.
Yep, but,
and the challenge, which kind of the no-win situation of the Al Smith dinner, but I love history and the association.
Usually if there's a chance to, I have a list of, my life will is finite. I was told recently. No, we're only here for a certain amount of time. And I'm a history buff. And when I see an opportunity to be, whether it's a White House Correspondents' Dinner or something, even when I know it's going to be tough, it's a tough room. I think you got to go and be part of that. So it's the Al Smith Dinner. Yeah.
Yeah. And there are people today that on my Twitter or X or whatever it's called will be like, I can't believe you were in the same room with him. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I feel like that's kind of the opposite of discourse. Like you shouldn't. Yeah. So anyway, that's why I'm running for senator.
As Tim Walz.
Yeah. Yes. Who's as your brother. Jim Gaffigan, the skinny. This is, again, to your being prolific, you've got another special. They have been stunningly successful. You've won countless awards. I think you have every award one can have. I think it's too many, and you should give me some. But the skinny, you're addressing weight loss. You're addressing people's obsession and weird feelings about weight loss and food, which is sort of a huge topic right now.
Yeah, I think it's really peculiar how people are secretive about taking an appetite suppressant. Like, or maybe they aren't secretive. I mean, but there's people that walk around with their hair dyed a different color. And we all know that, but nobody would think it was that weird.
You've talked about how there is kind of a shaming of people that have a food issue. Yeah. And then somehow there are other areas where we have a completely different, like drinking can be seen as very cool.
Romantic.
It's romantic and the
ad. I can't put the bottle down.
Yeah. Sounds much cooler than I can't put the cream pie.
But I love donuts.
I want a donut.
Yeah. I think that's what this drug, I mean, this is not humorous, but like, I think that that's what this drug proves is that like some people, it's might not be psychological. It's a chemical thing because it's fixed by chemical that they have a chemical compulsion. I mean, I come from a family that is like big eaters, like, and that's a good sound effect. But I
looks
think
like the way you did that looks like it would be Cookie Monster where most of it doesn't go in. The cookies are just
such
cookies
waste.
Are just bouncing off.
That's why you're so hungry. You're not getting much in the mouth.
Such waste, that Cookie Monster.
Cookie Monster never actually tasted a cookie.
Yeah,
it just, he just caromed off the felt backstop of his mouth.
It's like he wasn't even really eating it. It's sad.
But there is a cultural part of it too, which is, you talk about it from a Midwestern point of view. I've seen the Boston Irish side of it, which is, it is the way in my family that we showed love was eating, because it wasn't hugging and saying, I love you. And I love my parents, love my family. It was just cultural. It wasn't about that. We didn't drink. It was a dry house. And so no one could talk about sex.
Right. Right.
In a million years. I still don't understand how it works.
Yeah.
And then what do you have? You have, we're going to cook a giant meal and I'll eat it together, which is, we're going to eat tons of ham and potato and all the butter in the world. And that is going to be how we show our affection and love for each other and have a communal moment.
Celebrate or, lick your wounds by overeating.
Yeah.
Like my brother and I was like, I could throw up. That's what, like when you've eaten so much, you're like, I could throw up. I feel great. You know what I mean?
We did it. Yeah. So you talk about that and you talk about, obviously, how the drug has changed your life.
Yeah.
And
I also think it's temporary. Meaning, we're eventually going to find out that it makes people grow tails or something like that, right? So, I view this weight loss as completely, I don't think I'm going to be, not that I'm even super thin, but I imagine it's an ongoing battle, my weight, right?
I mean, but it's also, I mean, over the years, it was such a part of your comedy, too.
Yeah, it was just
so funny talking about it and talking about your obsession with food.
Yeah,
and things
the
like
love affair with food. Yeah. And now it's alcohol. No. there is something, but the skinny, there is about the appetite suppressant. But I use the title, the skinny, because that's, you know, you do this, you write the stand-up, and then kind of the theme, you see the theme when you look at the material. And some of the special is about parenting teenagers. Like, I had no idea how difficult it was going to be to parent teenagers, because they, and I say that with empathy and also exhaustion and part of I don't want to do it anymore, is because it's so difficult.
Yeah.
And I think, because I think adult humans, we have a built-in forgetter of the anxiety and the stress of being a teenager, because yeah. it's painful for them. So when they're going through it and you're this parent, it's not an easy road, even for the best kids. Yeah. And, you know, and so that's some of, you know, so I complain about my kids, but I do that in every special too. But it's, yeah. It's a different type of complaining.
But then you get to pay that. Then you can say, my bitching about you yes. paid for your tuition, paid for this roof.
And since they're teenagers, I know they'll never watch the special, so it doesn't matter.
They're not your demo.
Yes.
Well, Jim Gaffigan, The Skinny, is now available to stream on Hulu. And Jim, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you for lending your comedic genius to my show for over a 30-year period, and then continuing to come back and do the podcast. I love talking to you.
Thanks.
And I'm kind of in awe of just you're so talented and so funny, and I just, when you're around, I'm in a good mood.
Oh, well, thank you.
So you can't leave.
That's very nice.
Yeah, I can tell I'm really getting to you when your mouth gets very small. You went, thank you.
Thank you. I don't know what to do.
I'm not comfortable with the compliments.
Well, then you like
very
this part.
Weird.
You're a real shitty guy, Jim.
Yeah, that's more like it. I don't like the compliments, you know? What, are we in group therapy?
Yeah, you got an ugly mug, see?
Yeah, that's more like it. that feels better.
Hey guys, we're coming up on the 6th anniversary of this podcast.
That's unbelievable.
I know, 6 years.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a state of the podcast.
Yeah, let's remember, we haven't done one of these in a while. This is because, you know me, I'm more of an artistic type. I paint what I see, and I'm removed from, of course, the commerce of it all. I'm above that, high up in the clouds.
So you don't get paid?
No, I get paid, and I mean, if they miss my payment by a day, and if it's one penny off, I'm just a dog with a bone. I'm all over it. But again, then I go up in the clouds.
Oh, okay.
Well, as always, we like to bring Adam in.
Adam Sachs, the guru, the genius, the high muckety muck who makes it all run. I call you. You pull the strings. I'm about a puppet.
Yeah.
You guys are sort of like hand puppets, but I'm more of a marionette.
Oh.
And
what?
I'm just curious how it's all going.
It's going really well. I feel like I start every state of the podcast like that, but we've been lucky, and knocking on wood, we've been lucky enough to have a really good run here 6 years in. The audience is as strong as ever. Mm-hmm. And I'll get into in a second about where we're expanding our audience a lot.
You prepared a whole outline.
I wanted to, first of all, talk about the big guests we've had, because we've been on a run with yeah. guests that is just like unbelievable. The show has always had great guests, but, you know, most recently we've had, I just wanted to highlight a few, Tom Hanks, Al Pacino, Jon Stewart, Goldie Hawn, David Oyelowo, Jeff Bridges, Quinta Brunson, Don Cheadle, the Beastie Boys, Ron Howard, Ted Danson, Woody Harrelson. I mean, this is a crazy list of guests.
Big names, but also, I thought, great conversations. Everyone came to play.
Yeah, totally. And these types of names are not, you know, even a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, 6 years ago, these were not people you would ever even like hear on a podcast. Right. It's pretty amazing. Al Pacino, I don't know, he doesn't do a lot of podcasts. It's pretty amazing.
Right. Either things are going very well for us or very badly for Al Pacino. And you'd have to decide what that means.
And then I think the biggest update that I think, you know, a lot of it is pretty status quo based on last year. But the biggest update that we've done is we're experimenting. Conan, you probably don't even know this.
I love that you put in there that I'm 1987 Reagan.
You may not know that we're experimenting with putting full-length video episodes up. And it's only just been an experiment so far.
That are like an hour long?
Yeah, we've done two of them so far.
People watch them?
Well, that was the thing. We wanted to see, would people watch them? We put up Larry David and Harrison Ford. Oh. We put up those full episodes. And yeah, it was an experiment to see, would people watch them? Also,
I'm waiting with bated breath for the answer.
The answer is yes. I mean, we were curious, would it be like something where it was a substitute audience, you know, where it was like cannibalizing the podcast audience. People would instead listen to or watch it on video.
Yep.
But instead, it looks like it's really incremental. Like there's more people. We have, we have a huge YouTube audience. And
oh, cool.
We had been getting tons of fan requests.
Yeah, people were clamoring.
People constantly. We've put out clips now for a few years, obviously video clips. They want to watch it.
I know, but they like, okay.
I do think, I understand because Harrison Ford, he's so funny in a different way that people aren't always accustomed to. But to also to be able to see, when you see Harrison Ford, when his expressions and his deadpan.
That's true.
It does add something to it. And I'm glad. I mean, first of all, I love this medium and I was at first skeptical because I love the purity of, no, you just hear the voices. But once I started seeing some of the video with some of these people, I thought, no, I like that too.
I was skeptical too. I was the same way. I liked the purity of audio and, you know, I've been in the space, Matt's been in space forever, and it was always very pure audio only. But the truth is people want to see the video. YouTube is the number one like media consumption platform in the world, you know, more than any streamer, and people are consuming podcasts now. It's now become the number one platform for podcast consumption.
That's
get
weird.
Out!
Yes. So that is part of the bigger macro trend is that like people are expecting now that they're going there's going to be a video component to podcasts.
Interesting. I'm just glad you said macro trend.
I knew there was something that I would say that would just come out that would
yeah, sure. No, that's what this podcast is all about, bringing business speak into your ear.
So we're going to be on camera more.
Well, brings up an interesting thing. None of us are, well, Sonia, you might be wearing makeup.
I do. I wear makeup because of the YouTube component.
I'm not wearing anything. I think that's clear to the viewers. Have there been comments about my ghastly appearance?
I haven't seen any.
Visible eye vein?
No.
He wouldn't
thin
tell
lips.
You if
I
there
wouldn't
was.
Tell you if there was.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at you. You're staring back at me with your Michael Cera eyes. And I have no idea if you're lying to me or not.
I honestly have not seen any comments. Somebody, Chalemi would have come in and dusted your vein if there were comments.
Dusted my vein.
I don't know what you do to a vein.
Chalemi coming in.
Oh my God. Oh, he would be the one.
Oh
I love. Wait,
God.
Let's sit with this for a second. Dusted my vein.
Chills, we need a vein dusting.
Hey, Conan. Conan, you seem like you're in a pretty good mood today. Let's just say I got my vein dusted last night.
Uh-oh, we got a shiny vein. Chills.
That just sounds like a euphemism.
Yeah.
Oh, someone's in a good mood. Yeah, I got my vein dusted. Woo! Couple of tequilas, got my vein dusted.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, that's a question is, A, it starts with just some light makeup, which I'm still not doing. Sorry, YouTube. But then it's going to get into me having radical facial surgery if I want to stay in the podcast
right,
game.
Right.
And I fled to podcasts like a vampire fleeing the sun to get back to his crypt. I fled to podcasts because I knew this Irish melon was rotting fast. In the autumn heat, and here I am now on camera.
Well, you joked that you tried to like it was something different from the late night show, and then little by little, it's sort of
you keep adding things, yeah, and soon it's going to be yeah.
Should we?
We're bringing Andy in and a band.
Yeah.
And it's going
to
be.
You want me to get rid of these microphones? And I'm like, what do you want? Lav mics?
Yeah.
No, I like the mics. I like the mics.
So when you talk about your face, should we be like, oh no, you look great?
No, you don't have to do that because I get it.
Oh.
Whenever I talk about my face in these terms, everybody just quietly nods.
No, I think you look great.
I really do.
And I think that I do get self-conscious about like, should I be dressing different? I mean, makeup is a thing. How many people watch these videos? Like 30,000?
Hundreds of thousands.
No,
hundreds of thousands?
I know. Hundreds of thousands approaching millions.
Like approaching 30, millions. Mm-hmm.
But also, Sona, can I say something? This is... this is a compliment. You have beautiful skin.
Yeah.
You have skin that has... some melanin in it. You have, right? You have.
I do.
You
yeah.
can get a tan.
I am Armenian and Greek.
You are
and
Armenian
so
and Greek.
Both of those come with some color.
Yeah. Gourley and I look like we were just, they found us.
Hey, don't take me down with you.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fair.
I'm bringing you with me. But we were trapped in a cave for a couple of years and then they rescued us.
Uh-huh.
And when we went into the cave, we had a bone marrow disorder. So you are very fortunate that I don't, you always look very beautiful. You always look like you're wearing makeup, even when you're not wearing makeup.
Well, that's nice. Thank you. I do get self-conscious about my hair. Don't you? I mean, you have.
Oh, your hair is a mess.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is. But you have iconic hair. Don't you want to, like, don't you worry about your poof?
I got over that.
But couldn't we
I got
just
this headset on.
Do this, agree to just give up, because that's what I've done. Oh, that's why I'm always just wearing a ball cap. And no, I don't.
You know what? I have an idea.
A guy who fell off a truck.
I have an idea. Let's make a headset that has a Conan Pompadour attached, a fake one. So when I put my headset on, a Conan Pompadour, so the iconic swoop that some of the old fans want to see is there and coiffed.
But we don't have to wear those.
No, no. I think we should sell
everyone
those
should
in the merch store.
Oh. What? Headset?
With the poof. Kind of like the Groucho Marx.
Yes.
Nose and
yes.
Mustache.
And if you put it, let's say you're listening to your favorite tunes. I know how kids talk.
Yeah.
You're putting on, you listen to your favorite beats.
Fun ditties.
Or whatever.
Nice.
Or you're gaming and you want to put your headset on. You're playing Glip Glorp. You put the headset on and the hair comes right down with it.
Yeah.
I'll work on the prototype.
Seriously.
Those will sell like hotcakes, boss.
You did it.
That was great. Or we could do one with the Sona too, where your hair comes down on top of it, all 90 pounds.
Okay. You know what? How about, so the state of the podcast.
State of podcast, good.
Well, it's I have a quick question. Yeah. Do you remember last time we did State of the Podcast and you had run a study on all
brand
these,
safety?
Yeah, brand safety. And I remember asking at that time because there was like some things that were ticking on the chart about like profanity and sexual conversations and stuff. On that episode, we ended up using so much profanity
talking about profanity.
It. Did that up our profanity?
What has happened in the world of brand safety is the pendulum has swung back to be a little more sane. It was getting so crazy. If you remember, we were not rated well on brand safety, and part of it was like we were talking about war. Do you remember? Right. And it was like if you talk about war, you get like a red mark. And then obviously all the sex and profanity stuff. But now the
war, and then of course the nonstop sex and profanity.
We did not change anything after we had that conversation.
No, but brands changed. I think brands realized we're being too conservative and we're missing out on. Yeah. It wasn't even didn't even have to do with our show, but we're missing out on a lot of good.
The Church of Latter-day Saints is back on as an advertiser.
Absolutely.
And that's good.
Just for a trial, because you know one of us always has to use one of the products. I had to join the Mormon Church just for that.
Okay.
Had to. They saw you and assumed that you were there to talk.
I really can see you in that way.
Come in, brother.
Yeah. You're very Mormon-y.
You are so Mormon-y.
Really?
Yeah.
You think so?
You got
you're
a Mormon, very Mormon-y. Vibe.
Yeah.
But you got an LDS vibe.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
And you have several wives.
That's true.
One thing I will say, though, just in the state of the podcast, is this is, I would say this is open-ended. Like, we should check back in a year and see what the future looks like with video. Because there's a blurring of lines happening in general where there's, you know, YouTube creators have been out there for years doing their YouTube shows. Podcasters have been out there for years doing just audio shows. And there's a blurring of lines where now there's not as much of a differentiation between these different digital content creators.
I don't want this to become a TV show. I fled television.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it did.
It's like, in content because it's casual conversation. It's off the cuff and we don't have a plan.
But when you say TV show, you're talking about where it's distributed mostly because it's a video show now. I mean, we're just experimenting with it.
When I said I don't want it to become a TV show, what I meant was unless there's money in that.
Okay. Well,
yeah, this is the worst of both worlds because there's not TV money in it, and yet it's on video.
All right. Well, I was glad. I think this is mostly good news. I think it's all good news.
No, it's all good news.
It's all good news. And
and it's fun to still experiment and see where this
is
all going.
I'll say again, I've said it many times, but I have more fun doing this than just about anything I can think of. And I've had a lot of fun in my career. I thoroughly enjoyed doing the late night show, but this is so fun and so loose. Mm. So
you're welcome.
Let it become what it's going to become.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Oh, thanks a lot. Here.
We got you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, don't worry about a thing. Okay. We'll keep doing it.
And I'll hold your hand. Let's hold hands. My hands are a little clammy.
Yeah.
Is there
are clammy too.
Yeah. Oil on these?
I lotion up a lot.
You're warm. You're very warm.
You are very warm.
Yeah, well, talent burns hot.
Ugh.
I said you were warm, not hot.
I have a lukewarm talent. All right. Peace out, Tupac.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sonam Avsesian, and Matt Gourley.
produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Jeff Ross, and Nick Liao. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering and mixing by Eduardo Perez and Brendan Burns. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 669-587-2847 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. You can also get 3 free months of SiriusXM when you sign up at SiriusXM.com/Conan. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.